This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, broadcast from the offices of Katz Abosch, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. Mike, can you give us a rundown on who we have on the show today?
My pleasure. First, we've got Phil Cooksey, who is the president of Talent Pro. We also have Bob Cawley. Bob is the president of RCM&D. Augie Chisera, who is the senior vice president of the Baltimore region of M&T Bank Corporation. We also have Stuart Reinhoff. He is a managing director of Jones Lang LaSalle in Baltimore. And last but not least, Alvin Katz and John Abosch. They are partners of Katz Abosch.
Excellent. I'd like to introduce to you first Phil Cooksey, the president of Talent Pro. Phil, what is Talent Pro? What do you guys do?
Well, Talent Pro is a professional recruiting firm. We work primarily here in the Baltimore, D.C. area, combining, you know, finding people jobs in a, you know, tough market.
What kind of people do you find jobs for?
Ah, well, it ranges from anything across the board, from IT, finance, sales, marketing, human resources, keeping it mostly in professional space.
So these are more senior people.
Senior people. Yeah.
And so what are you supposed to be doing as the president of Talent Pro? What's your job?
Keeping the children at bay. No, it's very rewarding. I manage a team of about 25 folks, recruiters, account reps, consultants, and a lot of general management, training, development, mentoring.
Now, you have a funny accent. Where's that accent from?
I tell people I'm from the deep south, and then they sort of look at me strangely, but I'm actually from Sydney, Australia.
And how old were you when you came to the United States?
So I moved here when I was 27.
Mm-hmm. Was that easy moving to another country and reestablishing yourself?
You know, at first I thought it would be easy. Same language, you know, same culture. But I've quickly learned that in the U.S., when you ask somebody who you've never met before, what do they do? They tell you straight away their job title and their salary. Whereas where I come from, it's, you know, I'm into surfing, sailing, drinking wine, golf.
So. Tell me, how young were you when you started making money in Australia?
Well, it's, you know, unofficially, it was probably in second grade when I used to hustle for, you know, money to buy food from the school canteen, selling action figures and toy cars. Mm-hmm. Took my first job when I was 14.
So you have had this thing about business in you since a young age. How about mom and dad? Were mom and dad in business in Australia?
No, they were actually in education, and I came from a family of education. Uncles, aunts, you know, cousins were all in the teaching system at various levels.
Why do you like what you do? I'm trying to figure that out.
I started out as a teacher, believe it or not, and then sort of saw, you know, the writing on the wall that, you know, I can do something better. Not that teaching is a bad profession, but was in a role where I was helping students get work out of school. So then I took that into a professional career where I'm now helping, you know, individuals get new careers.
Mm-hmm. You came here to the States for a business opportunity?
No, actually, I originally was following a college sweetheart, unfortunately that went south, but happy to report I'm now very happily married and established here in D.C. with a two-year-old son and a lovely wife.
So your first job here in the States was what?
So my first job here in the States was a recruiter. Hooked up with a local firm, learnt the craft of screening individuals, finding them positions, working with companies, and then just took the career from there.
Was it difficult to transition from working with young people all day to now working with adults? Tell us about that.
You know, sometimes I feel my students at high school were a little bit more behaved than some of the people I work with, to be honest. But no, I feel, you know, a lot of the job that we do is coaching individuals. They're, you know, we're working with people who are going through midlife crisis. We're working with people who have been laid off from their current positions. And so it's very much a coaching role. And I find I can bring a lot of the skills I learned from teaching into advising people, both, you know, both candidates and also hiring managers.
What do you mean? What do you mean skills you learned in teaching to help advising people? What do you mean by that?
I think it's about thinking. A lot of people find that they, you know, they just land a job because of who they know or what they know, but are they really drawing upon their true strengths as an individual? So a lot of the skills that I learned as a teacher was bringing out the best in a student so they can excel in their class and get great grades. Well, I translate that into the workforce by looking at individuals and looking at the strengths and the things they've liked doing in their prior positions and helping them build upon those strengths so they can be successful in the future.
Well, that's the good side of it. What is the part of running a business that teaching did not prepare you for?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm dealing with people, so both from a candidate perspective and a client perspective or a customer, and people change their mind. You know, what keeps me up at night is that C-level person we've worked hard to find and locate a job, going to be there next Monday to start their new position. You know, people change their mind in the 11th hour for whatever reason, And sometimes they're difficult. That makes the business difficult, but you've got to overcome it.
Do you think you would have had the same career track if you'd stayed in Australia?
Good question. I did actually get exposed to recruiting when my roommates in the house I was sharing in Sydney were, you know, fresh back from backpacking around Europe for 2 years and started a recruiting company in our living room. So I got exposure even as I was a school teacher. Would come home from school, you know, at 2:30 in the afternoon, as teachers do, and saw resumes scattered all over the floor and, you know, what's all this about? And so sort of learned the industry from
there. How young were you when you began to put your finger on what other people's strengths were? How young were you when you began to do that?
I think that would have been as early as 13 or 14. I was into music when I was in high school, and actually put an ensemble together. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to perform at the Sydney Opera House, and I conducted the piece. So there was, you know, from a relatively young age, I could identify who was good at what and who wasn't so good at what. And
how's that translate into business? Is there any connection between what you did with that ensemble and what you're doing in business now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look at the team I have today, and they're a great group of people. But again, it's all about identifying the strengths of each individual and then helping them build upon it. I think a lot of managers, a lot of business owners sometimes try and fix the problem, but in some cases just unfixable. So, you know, I'm one who looks at the strengths and helps people develop the strengths rather than try and fix the weaknesses.
You seem pretty entrepreneurial. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, that's a fair statement.
So at what point did you realize teaching would not afford you the opportunity to be the entrepreneur you are today?
I probably realized that I got my first job, you know, out of college, and you know, yeah, teachers make a good starting base salary, but you know, then 10 years in the profession and you're making a little bit more than what you were the day you started. And I had friends that were going off to the Big Four or Big Five at that time, and I was like, you know, there's got to be more to a career than this. So I think that was where it...
Phil, how high is up? What's enough?
You know, there's no ceiling.
So keep on building.
Keep on building. You know, I'll keep doing this till I, you know, can't do it anymore.
So. What is the website address of Talent Pro?
So, yeah, our website address is www.talentproinc.com.
That's www.talentproinc.com.
Correct.
We've been speaking with Phil Cooksey, the president of Talent Pro here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is...
Louis Riesco.
Louis, who are you with?
I'm with Lumark Technologies.
And what is Lumark Technologies?
Lumark Technologies is a management consulting and systems engineering firm, and we are a federal government contractor.
And you are unique in what way?
We actually have a specialized knowledge and an ability to work with quality standards for our clients in the normal course of professional delivery.
Tell us more. What makes that so special?
Sure. We live and breathe standards like ISO and CMMI. So, for example, any type of work that we deliver to the federal government client, our staff are actually very versed in those types of standards. It helps them manage, you know, higher delivery. You know, the end result, of course, is customer satisfaction. But we're able basically to improvise and make some innovation in our project delivery.
What type of companies do you work with, Lois?
We work with pretty much all size, small, mid, and large business.
Can you give us a success story, please?
Sure. We won a contract in 2007 for a federal government client. Morale was low on the employee side. Customer, frankly, was not happy with productivity. Again, coming in there with a strong standards knowledge and quality knowledge, we suggested basically putting a few things in place, all the way from changing the work process and then also trying to do some measurement programs. The good thing is after about a year of performance, we actually then found that we did increase productivity. We reduced the backlog of work. The customer was ecstatic, and here we are 4 years later and actually got a follow-on contract.
What's your website, Lewis?
It's www.lumark.com.
And that was your business spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Internet Solutions. I'd like to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Bob Coley. Bob is the president of an organization known as RCM&D. Bob, what is RCM&D? What do you folks do?
We're a large professional services firm headquartered in Mid-Atlantic, headquartered in Baltimore, with offices throughout the Mid-Atlantic, focused on risk management, consulting, employee benefit advisory, and insurance brokerage.
So you're helping businesses understand their risks and then helping them identify the products for the insurance products as well as the employee benefits to help them succeed.
Yeah. So I mean, when you look at the insurance business, it's just like analogies in sports, there's silly acronyms. I use an acronym called TEAM, which is transfer, eliminate, avoid, or manage. So you really have to understand someone's risks, and then you take whatever proactive steps you can to either transfer that risk, eliminate it, avoid it, or manage it.
How'd you get involved as the president of RCM&D?
Well, back in 1997, I had a large firm, relatively large firm that was kind of struggling a little bit. We focused on primarily doing risk management work in the hospital and healthcare industry. I was a father of three young kids, on the road constantly. Had a great desire, and that's why I started this business, was to get home a little more frequently. The business was, I was saying, it wasn't going up or down, it was going sideways, and consequently decided to close that business and sought out the best local operation I could find to continue whatever career I was going to have. And
how large or small was RCM&D when you joined the firm?
We had 120 people.
How large is it now, or how small is it now?
285 people.
So it's almost 2.5 times the size.
Yeah. Yeah, we had one office in Baltimore. We're 125 years old.
That's how long have you been president?
6 years.
Uh-huh. How'd you manage to do that? How'd you manage to grow this firm like you've managed to grow it?
Well, certainly it's not me. I mean, it's a collection of people. I mean, I'm fortunate. I get to
take... Well, you're the president.
I get to take a credit for a lot of really, really talented and committed people. We are known as a hallmark for client service. We have an extraordinary group of people. I am largely what I call myself as a supply clerk. I really am the step and fetch it. Whatever they need, my job is to try and find it.
No, wait. I thought the idea of being the president is you get to yell at people and tell them what to do. What are you telling me?
It's slightly different in our world, and I think in most worlds too. My job, I work about 50% in the business and then 50% on the business. And my primary responsibility is to make sure that the staff that we have and the clients that we have are appropriately resourced to carry out the work that we've committed to.
How young were you when this team thing began to show up in your blood? How young were you when this began?
How many
brothers and sisters do you have?
I have four sisters.
Where are you in the pecking order?
I'm an extraordinary number. I'm five, so I'm number four. I have a twin sister. But what's extraordinary about our group is there's five of us in 4 years. No one's separated by more than 11 months.
So how'd that affect you?
How
did that have a positive effect on your business career?
Well, I think, how did it affect me? You can imagine growing up, in the Northeast Baltimore, very, very loving family, terrific parents, five kids. When the neighborhood moved, you moved because you were most of the neighborhood, but they were all girls. And, I certainly knew how to mend a button. I knew how to wash dishes. I knew how to do all those things. So I think as you try to look at that and take yourself into the business career, it really is trying to look at a group of people, understand the collective differences and the collective similarities of those people, and really try to make sure something greater comes out of it.
Wait a minute, I'm trying to figure this out. So you're telling me because you had four sisters that you grew up, you know, understanding how to sew and do dishes, but more important, or just as important, you're telling me that you began to understand the dynamics of a team.
Well, certainly dynamics of a group of people, and I had some great coaches when I was younger, and I had some good folks.
What do you mean?
Good parents, you know, that made sure that the group worked. You can imagine where everybody was very tight and close in age.
Are you more like mom or dad?
Dad.
What do you mean?
I think, well, first of all, it's interesting. I probably never heard that question before. My father died young. We were called Pete and Repeat. Those were our nicknames. We were very similar in many respects. Very community focused.
How old were you when your father passed away?
24.
How'd that affect you?
It's interesting. I grew up in the city. My mother, who died about 7 or 8 years ago now, she and I would say the typical, what I call the World War II family. So I would come down in the morning and head out wherever I was going, and my mother would have all the checks on the breakfast table laid out, all the coffee was set up, but her name wasn't on a checking account, her name wasn't on a car, her name wasn't on a house, and what mm-hmm. have you. And mm-hmm. and barely, because we grew up in the city, she didn't drive. We walked everywhere, walked to school, we walked to church, we walked to the grocery store. So here you are, you're at that point in your career, and you're trying to figure out how to teach a 60-year-old woman how to drive a car and park mm-hmm. in the city and what mm-hmm. have you. So you switch quickly from being son to whatever.
What did your dad teach you?
Hopefully humility, hopefully charity, clearly a sense of family.
How about mom? What did mom teach you?
She made the trains run on time. You know, mm-hmm. we were a bunch of young kids at the time and got us everywhere.
So I understand your middle name is really Team. I get it. Tell me, I understand that you're involved in a rather unique type of a nonprofit. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the unique things about being in a city like Baltimore, or being in the business that we're in, or in any community actually, is that, and I think most people today that are in professional services firms really understand that there is such a blur between work and life that it really becomes one string of things. And so you look for other opportunities outside of work to find meaning, if you will. And when we were in college, most of the fellas that we hung around with, we had this little we ultimately called the drinking club. It was the charity stood for the Gutter Boys, and it certainly wasn't because we were good bowlers. Mm-hmm. For many years, probably 10, 12 years, met every Thursday at a local establishment where we enjoyed each other's company, and was able to really get out of the house as we were all starting to get married and have young families. Mm-hmm. And in 1993, 5 or 6 of us got a little more mature about it, I'd say, mm-hmm. and really started this group. And we had one common denominator in the group, is that we all came from very close-knit families, and we all benefited from faith-based educations. And mm-hmm. Consequently, since then, we've raised probably $2.8 million.
For what purpose?
Funding scholarships for inner-city kids to go to faith-based schools.
That's really important to you.
It is.
Why?
It's faith-based, and we do believe that every child will have a chance if they get good support at home, good support mm-hmm. at school.
Gotcha. Michael?
Tell us about the transition between the business you had that went sideways and you running, obviously, a very successful business now. What's different about you?
Well, it was starting over. You went from the very top person in the company back to having to prove yourself from the very beginning. And I can remember, it's not the long hours. It's not those types of things. If I had a particular skill set, I was relatively good at understanding a client's issues. I was a relatively good listener, understanding how to fix some problems, was relatively good at developing business. At the time that RCM&D was in, which was during that period of time where we had been, I guess at that point, over 115 years old, we were in an extraordinary time where you look at generations of people. And our primary objective as a business is to continue to be independent, management owned. There's so much consolidation in our industry right now that the idea of how you provide professional services and to achieve a certain client intimacy with a client has got to be done by an independent committed group of people and not necessarily a publicly held firm and what have you. So you're sitting there, you're at a point where you're trying to look at your own career and saying, you know, what do I want out of my career? And what I wanted more than anything was to continue to work with clients at a very intimate level, stay in Baltimore, raise my family.
And what is the website address for RCMD?
It's www.rcmd.com.
RCMD.com. We've been speaking with Bob Cawley, president of RCMD, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Internet Solutions. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Build your business with guaranteed advertising results. Guaranteed advertising results? Executive Leaders Radio will guarantee your advertising results because we have confidence our listeners really listen. Our listeners really listen because they're like you. They're like you because they want to know how our CEOs really achieve success. The secrets of success, the mistakes leading to success, what to do and what not to do to achieve success. Our listeners listen because Executive Leaders Radio is unique. We ask our CEOs unique questions to learn the real truth to their success, and our CEOs are flattered to give back to their local communities and speak their wisdoms. Email advertise at Executive Leaders Radio. That's advertise at executiveleadersradio.com. Advertise at executiveleadersradio.com to build your business with guaranteed advertising results because our listeners really listen. Our content's unique, so our listeners are unique. For prestigious accounting firms, law firms, wealth managers, management consultants, information technology gurus, commercial realtors, employee benefits firms, banks, investment banks, CEO clubs, staffing firms, and franchisors, advertise at executiveleadersradio.com will guarantee your advertising results because our listeners really listen. So we'll build your prestigious business with guaranteed advertising results. Email advertise at executiveleadersradio.com. That's advertise at executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. I'd like to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Augie Chassera. He's the Senior Vice President, Baltimore Region for M&T Bank Corp. Augie, what is this M&T Bank Corp? What do you guys do?
Pure and simple, Herb. We're a commercial bank headquartered in Buffalo, New York, founded in 1856. Been around the banking business for, about 150 years.
It's a big bank.
It's a big bank. You know, it's funny, this notion of being a big bank. When I joined the place 17 years ago, we were a lot smaller than we are today. And I'll tell you, through all the acquisitions that we've done, we've probably done about 15 to 20 over the past 25 or 30 years. We fight this notion of getting big every single way, you know, every single day. And one of the ways that we do that is we take that geography. We're typically in the mid-Atlantic, so kind of upstate New York, central Pennsylvania, Maryland, D.C., northern Virginia. We take that region and we carve it up 15 different ways because we know that people in Buffalo don't want to be banked by folks in Rochester, and folks in Annapolis don't want to be banked by folks in Baltimore and so on and so forth.
Makes a lot of sense to me to keep the local touch.
That's right.
Augie, what's your, as the Senior Vice President of Baltimore Region, what are you supposed to be doing for a living? What's your job all about?
Well, I'll tell you, sort of balancing three constituencies. We've got the bank to kind of take care of and the shareholders. But equally important, at least to M&T, is that the employee piece is taken care of and also the community piece is taken care of. You don't carve a geography up like we do 15 different ways if you don't care about the sort of communities where you live and operate. So I've been with M&T 17 years. They asked me to kind of come to Baltimore about 9 years ago, 8 years ago, to kind of work in the Baltimore region. You can't manage Baltimore from Buffalo. So I moved here with my family. Both my daughters were born here.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
Two younger sisters.
Two younger sisters. And so you're the oldest of three.
Yep.
So tell me, what effect did being the oldest boy of three have on your business career? How did that help your business career?
You know, it's probably less about being the oldest of three and probably more about growing up in sort of an extended family where I was kind of the youngest of 25, if you will.
Extended family, young. Okay, tell me about that.
So I had grown up in sort of a flat on the upstairs with sort of my parents, obviously, and then my dad's aunt and uncle lived on the bottom floor, and my other aunt and uncle lived in the back of the house, and another aunt and uncle lived down the road, and our church was kind of half a block away. And so while maybe I was only a nuclear family of five, our grandmother lived with us, so fine, make it six. Every Sunday, it was a combination of going to Mass in the morning, then kind of coming back, having coffee on the porch, having dinner in the afternoon, and then all the uncles fighting afterwards, and then you know, watching them all get back together again the next morning.
I'm trying to figure out how that affected your business career, though. What do you think?
Well, look, I think at the end of the day, at least the banking business, it's all about people. So when we do conversions and acquisitions and we talk to individuals, I say, look, people don't bank with institutions. They bank with people. And as long as you kind of keep that sort of front and center in your conversations and discussions, you don't go too far astray.
So in that mix of 25 yep. children, you were known as the what?
The youngest guy by
good
far.
Good question.
And I always want to hang out with the older cousins. I remember a story very clearly. And my cousin Tom, who also happens to work at M&T, hates when I tell this story. Because basically, it was something as simple as walking to school. He was in sixth grade, I was in first grade. And I wanted nothing more than to walk to school with my two older cousins. And, you know, they're in fifth grade, they're in sixth grade. And I remember having to go to his mom, my aunt, or at least my dad's aunt, and say, look, I want to walk to school with them. And they obviously acquiesced. Now, granted, I had to walk sort of three or four
so
steps behind
opposed
them,
to as opposed to dominating a situation, you really like to hang out with the big boy. You like to help people succeed, don't you?
Absolutely. It is about people succeeding.
Is it really? I mean, I thought the name of the game with the banker was show me your financials, and if they don't look good, that's the end of the story.
Look, we are, you know, sort of take a step back, and whether you may know, you may know this, you may not know it, M&T is probably one of the most generous corporations in the United States.
What do you mean?
Probably within the top 10, if you will, in terms of how much we give as a percentage of our net income to the communities where we operate. And we do that because we know at the end of the day, it's good business to do it. Because when things happen in the communities where you live and work, and so folks you see on the soccer field, folks you see on the board of directors, they also own companies, they also have financial needs, and it's easy to kind of grow into those kind of relationships. Well, it's a natural extension.
What's the best part of your job?
The best part of my job, bar none, is being with people, far and away. And whenever things kind of get kind of, you know, rough and tumble around the organization, if you will, nothing makes people better feel better. Nothing makes me feel better than kind of getting out and talking to our customers.
But why do you have to bother talking to your, I mean, just tell them to send you their financials, right? You just look at the numbers and make a decision, no?
Well, we see what happens when folks try and look at numbers and make decisions. You end up with a financial mess like we had the last 3 or 4 years in the industry. You know, M&T is one of the banks that's been able to kind of rise above that. And I think it, one of the reasons why we've been able to rise above it, because at the end of the day, you do business with people that you know. And the way you get to know people is by getting out, talking with them, knowing who they are, and that ends up sort of serving you well in the long run.
What was it like being an outsider in the Smaltimore, so to speak, community?
It was funny. When we thought about kind of getting involved with the old First National Bank of Maryland 8-9 years ago, there was a sense, at least I had this sense, because I was kind of an active part of sort of the due diligence work on it, that we're kind of coming to the big city. You know, Baltimore is going to look a lot like Washington, like Philadelphia, like Boston. You know, how well is our kind of relationship model and orientation going to fit in a big East Coast city like Baltimore? So I remember this very clearly. I came down here, and after a week, I called up some of the guys in Buffalo and said, we're going to do just fine on the relationship front. And I remember having conversations with people, and they'd always be taken aback a bit when I'd say this. I said, you know what? I said Baltimore is a lot like Buffalo. And I said, believe it or not, that's a big compliment to Baltimore, because it is about relationships, and it is about knowing the people you're doing business with, and it is about kind of contributing to the community at a much deeper level. And we knew once we learned that Baltimore was very similar in those aspects to communities that we've been successful in, we knew we'd be successful.
I guess one of the benefits of being a banker is you get to go in at, 10 o'clock and leave at 3 o'clock or something like that?
Well, listen, I'll take a job if that's kind of what you're offering her, because I've got two young girls, 7 and 3, so my days usually start off at the gym at about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And then oftentimes, if you're going to see folks, you're not going to see them during the workday when everyone's working. You're going to see them sort of after hours on their time. And so this is, I think that model of the banker kind of, you know, sitting around, starting his day around 9 or 10 and finishing it around 3 is a myth.
Do you ever have to work on weekends?
Well, look, this is not a job. I've committed myself to a lifestyle and a career. You know what I'm saying? And this is more than just kind of getting a paycheck.
Doesn't it feel like work, though?
Oh, absolutely not. I couldn't do it this often, and I couldn't do it this hard if this was work.
What do you mean?
You know, I can't even answer that question, Herb, because I don't compartmentalize I don't compartmentalize my life this way, because when you do kind of what we do, living is work, and working
really,
is life,
really
and that's not a bad thing.
This really serves you. This really feeds you.
Well, it's not just me. I said it feeds our organization. I don't think it's any surprise that, you know, our tenure at M&T is twice that of the financial industry overall.
What's that? The folks that are working at M&T are there twice as long as the norm?
Yeah.
So you look at financial services. So why is that?
That's a great question.
Because the organization must cultivate that, I guess.
I don't know what it is. You know what I mean? I think you get
around
the place.
You're part of it. I think I can understand. Working with you, you're a fun kind of guy. I mean, you're not the kind of guy that wants to park in the president's spot and tell me to get away.
No, you know, a lot of us,
a team kind of person.
And a lot of us have grown up in the organization for a long time. And you're creating something new. You're helping people out. And you're making a difference in the communities where you operate. And that has some staying power.
Is it true that do you really go to people's bar mitzvahs and weddings and christenings and stuff like that?
Yeah, you do when you're you know, fortunate enough to sort of be invited. Because you know what people's and individuals and companies' financial component to their lives is deep, mm-hmm. and it's very personal, and you want to make sure that you're dealing with someone that can kind of relate with you at that level.
Augie, what is the website address for M&T Bank?
www.mtb.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Augie Chasera, Senior Vice President, Baltimore Region, M&T Bank Corp. This is Herb Cohen with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Arlen Feldman.
Arlen, who are you with?
I am the marketing manager of Washington Management Group and Fed Sources.
Two companies. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Washington Management Group provides GSA schedule consulting, and they are the parent company to Fed Sources, which is the leading market intelligence service provider.
What is market intelligence services?
If you need to buy or sell to the federal government, we can help you do that. We help you succeed in the federal government.
Well, why is that important work that you do?
You know, it's very important in this industry because obviously with constricting budgets and people needing to use their time and energy effectively, we can help them provide that kind of service when they need to know more information about the specific opportunity or where they should approach the government next. We can help them with that sort of intelligence and insight in the industry.
Now, why are you better than anybody else at doing this?
You know, we like to say that our service is really what makes us different. We provide a service to our clients, and they know they can call us with whatever questions they might have. We don't just give them a login to a database and say, okay, you're on your own. You know, we really have their back, and we really help them decide and help make these tough decisions and really help them grow and really, really tailor where they need to go with some of their time.
You in particular, Arlen, what do you love most about doing this?
You know, I love the company. I love being able to say that I work for an honest corporation. You know, I really admire some of the senior managers that I work with. I think they have a fabulous story in the government industry, and I like to know that I'm working with a great group of people that are helping a variety of people in this industry succeed.
In just a few words, what's a great company for you to work with?
We have a lot of partners, the Coalition for Government Procurement. They're a wonderful organization. You should check them out, too.
And give us your website, please, Arlen.
All right. WashMG and FedSources.com.
Thank you very much. That was your business spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. We'd like to introduce to you Alvin Katz and John Abosch. They're partners in a firm called Katz Abosch. What is Katz Abosch? What do you guys do?
We're an accounting firm. We do taxes. We do tax planning, management advisory services. We help people make more money and keep more of what they make.
Now, how did you guys get a job at this firm?
We were smart. We founded it.
You founded it. How
yes.
many years ago did you start this firm?
A little over 41 years ago, 1969.
You guys started this firm 42 years ago. How large or how small is this firm now?
We have about 85 people in total.
You've grown to 85 people. And in terms of competitively in this region, where do you guys fit?
We are one of the top three firms that are considered independent firms. We're not, in other words, not part of a national or international firm.
You're one of the top three firms in this region that's independent. You guys started it 41, 42 years together. Now, I'm trying to figure out what was the special sauce here. I mean, are you guys identical? I mean, you're both accountants, you're both CPAs. I'm just trying to figure out what the special sauce was. Why was this organization able to grow like this?
Well, we did things differently. We advised our clients. we were not just historians. We didn't just tell them what happened last week, last year, but we advised our clients how to make more money and how to grow in the future. And we brought a different dimension to the table than most of our competitors.
But I mean, okay, so I got technically you guys were good accountants and good advisors, and you were looking forward as opposed to just simply in the rearview mirror, and I'm sure your clients appreciated that. But how'd you grow the firm? What was the special stuff with that?
Well, we're both people persons, as far as we're concerned. And whenever we met somebody, we tried to do the best job we could, but also build it into a new relationship.
So when you guys got started as a partnership, as partners, did you have like a long, lengthy shareholders agreement so that, you know, whenever there was an argument, you'd have a way of settling it and stuff like that?
That's a good question. Actually, we didn't have any agreements probably for a good 4 to 5 years, and until we brought in the third person, then so, we got agreements.
So how do you guys, where are you guys different, and how do you guys settle differences when it comes to making decisions? And how has this managed to thrive over the course of 41 years?
We looked at the big picture. We had the same goals in mind. And if we had differences, they were small, and we were always able to resolve them and looking at what was best for the firm, for us individually.
Yeah, but you're two individual people. I mean, you guys didn't work exactly the same hours. You didn't bring in exactly the same buildings. You didn't handle exactly the same clients. Like, weren't you concerned that the other guy wasn't working as hard or wasn't making as much and maybe he shouldn't really be your partner?
No, that was actually never a concern of ours. We had confidence in each other. We always felt that each other was holding up his end, as we have with our present partners now. We feel that people were doing their job, and we had confidence, particularly John and I, we had confidence in each other, and we never had any difficulties with that.
By the way, it's very easy to do that, because when you start out with nothing, and we started out with nothing, anything we do is more than we had before. So we were always able to resolve our differences.
How did the two of you meet?
Actually, we met, I believe, initially through a cousin of mine, or it could have been my first wife. They went to high school with John. John's exactly 2 years younger than I am. And so we actually met prior to either of us being in business.
And at one time you were working together for another firm. Tell
Correct.
Us about that.
Well, we worked together. It was very interesting. We would represent a client that was about an hour away, and Alvin and I would drive up together, and we wouldn't say a word to each other back and forth. We really respected each other's ability, but really didn't get along. But later, as we grew and we matured and we understood the big picture, we were able to overcome those differences and build what I believe is a very successful business together.
Did you purposely set out to overcome your differences, or did they just sort of dissolved away?
Well, we talked for about 2 weeks to a month before we got together to make sure we could get together. And I would say it just sort of happened. They sort of dissolved away. We didn't sit down and say, we're going to work everything out. We just worked everything out. We communicated with each other.
Yeah. What's been the highlight in working with John, Alvin?
As with day one, I totally respect John's intellectual ability. I respect his business development ability. I think he is a tremendous advisor to our clients, and I would seek his. I trust him implicitly, and would certainly go to him for advice and guidance if I needed it, and have no trouble suggesting that other people do the same.
John, tell us about one time where, if it were not for Alvin, this firm would not be where it is today.
Well, I would say from day one, Alvin was terrific at marketing. He was a wonderful advisor, and I think he taught me a lot of things. I learned a lot from him, how to market, how to build a firm, and I think his marketing strength and the way he relates to people has been a key to the success of our firm.
So since this partnership works so well, you've kept it close and it's just the two of you, is that right?
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. We now have about 20 other partners in varying levels, and in fact, our managing partner is not either one of us. It's one of our younger partners, and that's worked out very well. Our intention is to see the firm perpetuate itself.
I was going to ask you, what's the evolution of this firm, and how does it differ from what many other firms are going through, and how's that benefit the clients and the team?
Well, we have we have people that have been with us for many, many years. We have very low turnover. So the people that work with clients are, to a great extent, the same people that they've been working with for many years. And so our turnover is a big plus because we have very little and we have continuity, which is good for our clients and good for us and good for the organization.
What do your clients tell you about that? I guess if I was a client, I'd be pretty concerned about what the evolution of the firm was, because I'd want to know that I've got somebody that gets to know my account and really stays with my account. Am I mistaken about that?
No, that's exactly right. And generally the person...
It also seems to me that if I was looking to get involved on it as a team member in an accounting firm, I'd want to know there was some stability as well as upward growth. It sounds like there is here, huh?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
I guess I'm wondering what happens when one or both of you decide to retire. Do you both go out on the same day or what?
Well, even there we have differences. John has chosen to semi-retire, and my goal is to never retire. So far that's working out well for each of us individually as well as for the firm.
So, John, you're semi-retired right now?
Correct. That's right.
Has that been easy to let go of the day-to-day running of the firm with Alvin?
Well, the short answer is yes, it has. I didn't think it would be so easy, but it has been easy, and I've made a 180-degree turn, and I found it's worked out well for me.
180-degree turn meaning what?
Well, from someone that was here early every morning and late every night, many mornings, many evenings, I'm here now very, very seldom. Mm-hmm. And it's been an easier transition than I thought.
And Alvin, you're really enjoying the work.
I love it. I love being, as John said earlier on, we're both people persons, and I love being with people. I love the opportunity to interact with people who I've never met before, and I'm excited every time I do that.
Is there really opportunity for the 85 other folks, though?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because that's the way we've constructed the organization.
What do you mean?
Everybody has an opportunity to progress at his or her own pace.
Are there other folks here that are partners in the firm?
Yeah, as mentioned before, we have about 20 other partners.
20 of the 85?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty widespread at the top, isn't there? You must really be providing some opportunity for your other folks. What's the website address for this firm?
The website address is www.katz.com.
We've been speaking with Alvin Katz and John Abosch, partners in Katz Abosch, co-founders of Katz Abosch here at Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Build your business with guaranteed advertising results. Guaranteed advertising results? Executive Leaders Radio will guarantee your advertising results because we have confidence our listeners really listen. Our listeners really listen because they're like you. They're like you because they want to know how our CEOs really achieve success. The secrets of success, the mistakes leading to success, what to do and what not to do to achieve success. Our listeners listen because Executive Leaders Radio is unique. We ask our CEOs unique questions to learn the real truth to their success. And our CEOs are flattered to give back to their local communities and speak their wisdoms. Email advertise@executiveleadersradio. That's advertise@executiveleadersradio.com. advertise@executiveleadersradio.com to build your business with guaranteed advertising results because our listeners really listen. Our content's unique, so our listeners are unique. For prestigious accounting firms, law firms, wealth managers, management consultants, information technology gurus, commercial realtors, employee benefits firms, banks, investment banks, CEO clubs, staffing firms, and franchisors, advertise@executiveleadersradio.com will guarantee your advertising results because our listeners really listen. So we'll build your prestigious business with guaranteed advertising results. Email advertise@executiveleadersradio.com. That's advertise@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions. Like to introduce Stuart Reinhoff, a managing director in Baltimore of Jones Lang LaSalle. Stuart, what is this Jones Lang LaSalle? What do you folks do?
Jones Lang LaSalle is a full-service commercial real estate company, headquartered in Chicago, publicly traded company, the second largest commercial real estate company in the world.
And you're helping your clients buy, sell, lease, and all the variety of services in and around commercial real estate?
Yes, we in the Baltimore market, we primarily work in office and industrial real estate. We also, in addition to transaction services, provide other types of real estate-related consulting-based services to our clients, both investors and corporate occupiers.
Interesting. Now, how I just get the sense that you're like pretty good at managing relationships. How young were you when you realized that you're like really good at managing relationships? When did this trait begin to show up?
Well, I think that probably the first place where I realized how important the relationships were to me with the people I was around was being involved in team sports. When I was a young kid, being on the team and participating as a teammate was very important to me, and I think that those are important skills that have been of benefit to me up to today.
So what tended to be your role in the team, and how has that translated itself to help your business career?
I think probably the aspect of being on the team that was always the thing that I enjoyed the most was watching people around me be successful and being complimentary in terms of doing what I can to be of assistance to them. And then where necessary, taking a leadership role and taking the initiative in order to be able to provide solutions to customers.
So you could pass the ball, but you could also run with it.
Yeah, and I think probably in some ways I like passing the ball as much as running with it.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older brother and an older sister.
So what made you different?
I think that I was a little bit more independent than my brother and my sister. My brother, I think, is somebody who set a good example for me. He was somebody who always worked pretty hard, and those were things that I think were positive to us, to me. But I think that I probably had a little bit more of an independent streak than the other two.
How about mom and dad? What did you learn from dad?
I think I learned work ethic from my dad. My dad was a surgeon, and he worked many, many long hours for a long time. But then he also had some outdoor interests, and those are interests that I have today.
How about mom? What did mom teach you?
My mom was very much of a community-oriented type of person. She was a community volunteer, active in a number of organizations, you know, the church and the auxiliary board of the hospital, that type of thing. And she was always a very supportive person to us growing up.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Baltimore City.
Okay. And were you the rich kids in the neighborhood, given your father was a surgeon?
Well, I grew up in a fairly affluent neighborhood. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think that I started working when I was young. I think I liked the interest in having independence was always important to me.
Now, you've said independent twice here and once in the green room.
Yeah.
What did that look like in your life as a young person?
I think that what it was it was really an attempt by me to learn how to make decisions for myself, try to think about what I'm doing independently. Sorry to use that word again, but really an opportunity for me to try to think on my own and learn how to make good decisions myself.
So why not just ride on the coattails of your surgeon father who was making good money? Why not do that?
I guess it was really a matter of just wanting to try to create my own opportunity. Yeah. He set a great example for me. I think he worked very, very hard. I probably earlier in my career was maybe not as disciplined academically, but I think that maybe that might not have been a choice for me, to be honest with you. But I felt as though there was a great opportunity for me to try to do my own thing.
Now, you mentioned that you like to pass the ball, perhaps even more than run with it, yet you're in the cutthroat commercial real estate business. How in the world do those two things fit together?
Well, I think that really in our business, teaming is extremely important. You have to try to put together a group of professionals who are going to be able to provide complementary services in order to be able to create solutions for clients. And sometimes that might be a different set of skills and abilities that certain players are going to be able to bring to the equation. So, for instance, we might have somebody with tremendous analytic skills. We might have somebody with good relationship skills. We might have somebody with good other types of skills regarding commercial real estate that might help us to be able to create solutions.
So you're telling us business is not about crushing the competition?
I think business is about trying to assemble the best players on the field to provide the services that are based upon what we best understand about what the client needs. And I think that really learning how to listen and understand what those needs are is probably our biggest challenge.
Stuart, grandparents. Did any of your grandparents have a significant effect on you?
Yes, I think so. I think that my grandparents did. I'm from a medical family. On my father's side, my grandfather was a surgeon also. And then on the other side of my family, my grandfather, actually, he was somebody who was a very successful athlete young in his life. And then actually he lost his eyesight when he was in his early 30s. So here was a guy who had been very successful early in his life, and he had actually learned how to live with a handicap, his blindness.
So what did that teach you?
I think that it basically taught me that that you could overcome obstacles. You know, you're not necessarily going to be given the best set of circumstances every time. What you really want to do is you want to create the opportunity to overcome the challenges that you have in front of you, whether those are ones that are real or imaginary, actually.
Mike?
Was there pressure for you to become a surgeon like the previous two generations?
I don't think so, really. The pressure was more on my brother. He was the older brother. He was the one who might have had some of that pressure. I think that the medical field had changed pretty significantly in the period of time over the span of my father's career. So I think that in some ways he felt as though he was indirectly sending the message that that was not something that he thought was really a mandatory thing to do.
What's the best part of your job?
I think that the best part of my job is meeting different people and getting the opportunity to really understand what people are doing. Learning, this has been a great experience for me meeting you all, because I've had an opportunity to see how other people work and what other people are doing. And that's probably the part that really is of the most interest, is just developing business relationships in that way.
I guess you meet a lot of people because everybody needs real estate.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Stuart Rienhoff, a managing director in Baltimore of Jones Lang LaSalle. Stuart, what is the website address of Jones Lang LaSalle?
The website address is www.am.jll.com.
All right, let me have that one more time. Jones Lang LaSalle? And the website address is, what do we got there?
www.am.jll.com. That's the North America website for Jones Lang LaSalle.
Excellent. Let's see. Mr. Mannion, can you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of speaking with today?
Absolutely. Our first guest was Phil Cooksey. Phil's the president of Talent Pro. We heard from Bob Cawley, president of RCM&D. Next was Augie Chisera. Augie is the senior vice president of the Baltimore region of M&T Bank Corporation. We then had Alvin Katz and John Abosch. They are co-founders and partners of Katz, Abosch. And most recently, again, we've heard from Stuart Rienhoff. Stuart's a managing director in Baltimore of Jones Lang LaSalle.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions, for giving me a hand structure in the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. This is Herb Cohen. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.